Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk.
And where we play with needles.
We do. Twice weekly we do that, yes. let's see. Oh, actual news. Within 24 hours of us recording, which is unusual, we heard from Jane Scheffler Witt wrote to us, and it's everywhere, that Thread Heaven... How do they describe it? All the Thread Heaven has been shipped. So
yes.
if you see it, buy it, because there's no more coming.
Yes, exactly. Of course, which then my immediate thought, because of what I do for a living, is, I wonder if we could make that.
Uh-oh.
Which I think we can. So I between me and the bank of chemists that I have available to me, I bet I could bring it in and make some sort of facsimile of that. So that's going to be sort of percolating in the back of my head, because I did buy some after, I think it was Vanna that we spoke to.
Right.
Who was just raving about it.
She must be in tears in a corner right now.
I think we should all buy as much as we can and just ship it to her. But now, so I have some, so that's my benchmark. So I know that I know what it's supposed to do, and I know what it's supposed to feel like. And really, to me, part of it too is the container, because you have to be able to get, you know, your finger on it and get it into the container.
Yeah.
So I'm on it. I don't know when that's going to happen, because it really depends on our like actual paying job workload. But it'll be something sort of percolating in the back of my head of what things could possibly be in it. And based on how it looks and feels, I have some ideas, and I'm going to see if we can make some. So,
hey,
we'll see.
And then poor Jeremy, finish your homework. We got Thread Heaven to pack.
Well, it won't even be called Thread Heaven. It'll probably be called like, I don't know, because it won't be as good, certainly, at least to start, and it doesn't have the following that Thread Heaven has. So it'll probably be like Thread, you know, nice meadow we like to visit, or I don't know if I can aspire to heaven quite yet.
I read somewhere that it must have been the official announcement. It was here, retirement, here we come. You can just see.
Oh yeah.
Can just see them. That last box picked up by UPS. That's it. We're out.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's sort of a thought too. Is I wonder if they would license the formula to somebody. That's another thing.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that it wasn't we're ceasing production, but so and so was picking it up to just end it. I was surprised at that.
Yeah. So. Is it something that's made by a large company, or is it a mom and pop kind of thing? Because I don't even know. I never thought about it before.
No, haven't the foggiest idea. Just shows up, you know, it's just there next to the register at the stores, and
it's
all
just
I know.
Yeah. There. All right. Yep. Well,
not anymore. So every Thread Heaven addict is headed to the store this morning and give me everything you got.
Yeah, I have to say, so I think and it's funny because I have it and then I keep forgetting I have it, and I think it does help. What I like about it is it's quick and portable, but I still think my favorite thread trick has been the flat iron, which is really just a convenient facsimile of a regular flat, clothing iron. Just because some of the more ornery threads, especially the synthetics, and actually silks too, silks are pretty easy. They just take all the kinks out. And with the synthetics, some of the ones that are a little bit, less, what's the word I'm looking for? Flowy, I guess. So less flexible, seem to, once you put them through a flat iron, they get a little bit more fluid. So I really like that. That's so far my favorite one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm still hanging on to the lesson we got from Susan Greening Davis about beeswax. So
beeswax, right. So yeah. Beeswax works too. And that's just that's such an old fashioned one too.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, when you think about it, natural material. So.
Yeah, if only you knew somebody that had beeswax.
Yes, if only I knew.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I'll tell you this though. So working, I work with a lot of beeswax, both, you know, because I have beehives, and then I work with beeswax at work because beeswax is an ingredient in tons of cosmetics and things like that. What you don't want if you do go and get local beeswax is make sure that you heat it and filter it really well, because the beeswax that you get out of a hive is going to be dirty, because, you know, well, let me clarify that. The wax that is in the comb that the bees are using is immaculate. It's beautiful. Especially new wax. Older wax starts getting dirty, and wax that the bees aren't using, they don't clean, so it ends up getting dirty. So you have, like, well, bee parts and just stuff, right? Pollen and all things that you don't want near your needlework. So if you can get local beeswax from somebody, just make sure that it's been cleaned, you know, and you can see visibly whether or not it's been cleaned. Or you can just buy plain beeswax from someplace. But there's also regular beeswax, and then there's deodorized beeswax too. So for me, I don't know that I'd have a preference, and I don't know that one or the other would be better. But my gut says that the cleaner it is, and deodorization would be one of the cleaning steps, the better it would be, and the less likely it would be to over time sort of age the threads.
I didn't know it had an odor. I'd never noticed an odor with beeswax.
Oh, it does. Absolutely. Fresh. Uh-huh. Well, you don't, because by the time you ever get it, it's been sitting around, yeah. Right? Yeah. Beeswax is one of the most lovely scents in the entire world. So when you open up a beehive, between, it's not even the honey, because the honey's all capped, right? You don't smell that. You smell wood, and you smell beeswax. And it's just this sweet, it's indescribable. So now I'm going to have to see if I can get some fresh and package it up and ship it to you so you can
smell it. I never noticed an odor.
Yeah, it definitely does. So like if you go into a craft store and stuff, by that time the odor is pretty much, because most of that is deodorized. So actual beeswax itself is it's a little darker. And it definitely has an odor, and it's really lovely. So, and I think, so my gut says, and again, this is based on absolutely no information whatsoever other than just me thinking about it. I would use beeswax on something like a reproduction sampler, because that feels right to me, right? You're using natural fibers, traditional fibers, and traditional materials. And then with something like, a newer piece that's using man-made fibers, I wouldn't feel the need to use beeswax necessarily. I would use something like a Thread Heaven, which is a more synthetic-based thread lubricant.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But either way, beeswax is, because beeswax can also be kind of hard too.
Yes, yes.
So,
well, that's when I finished up the Debbie Rowley piece, the beading. I used beeswax on the beading thread. Mm-hmm. And it was that old piece that I had from way back when I did candle wicking for about a week. And it'd been sitting around for, you know, years. And
yeah.
It's pretty stiff stuff. And
It is. It can be a little dry. And when it's fresh, go out to the hive right now and walk back in with new beeswax, it's a lot more malleable. And it seems to dry out over time. So yeah. there is that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I have to replace mine, cause I was going to use it on something else. And I really feel like it's been sitting around in the open air for years.
Where would you even get beeswax? I mean, I suppose you could just buy at a craft store, right?
Yeah. At a craft store. Yeah.
You could probably just buy a beeswax candle.
Yeah. Well, this, I have this holder that it came in, and I've seen them there. They still make them, as far as I know, that has slots in it. And then it's a little disc of beeswax, and you can just drag your threads through the slots and get into the beeswax. And that, you know, that way you're not handling the beeswax. It's the holder. So that's what I use.
Yeah.
So if I can find a replacement disc, then I'll get that. But I probably should get something fresh. So, but I know what you mean. Yeah. When you talk about, say, a reproduction sampler, you just feel almost compelled to use everything natural. Silk, cotton, linen,
Well, yeah, because you want to do it the way it was done, right? So, and I would imagine it would age the way it was done originally, too. So if the beeswax is going to discolor over time, it will discolor the way that an original piece would.
Right. Yeah. So, well, anyway, that's, I'm gonna go with the beeswax. And I do have a slightly used container of Thread Heaven, you know, that I will auction off. It becomes a black, you know, there'll be a black market for Thread Heaven here before
very long. Right. Yeah. Now, I'm pretty sure that I can make at least a facsimile of it. So, I'm gonna put some effort into that. Because it's funny, as we're talking too, I'm kind of scrolling through the internet a little bit, about Thread Heaven, and it's like this cult thing where even before the announcement that it's not available, there are just post after post of, this has been the best thing ever, and I can't believe I ever sewed before I found it, and, you know, all of these things. So yep. I think it's worth trying to find something.
Yes. Yeah. Well, there you have it. Yep. I just pictured Jeremy in his bedroom at night shoving stuff in little blue boxes.
Everybody needs a high school job, so.
Need to remind people, we're on FlossTube. Starting to get, subscriptions are starting to pick up there, but putting the shows up on FlossTube, and, learned a lesson about that, especially our Sunday shows, hour-long shows. Holy smokes, they take forever to upload to FlossTube. And, was having a conversation with Nicola Parkman of Hands Across the Sea Samplers, and, we were talking about that. And she says she just puts it on before she goes to bed and uploads it, and in the morning it's uploaded. So I'm learning, because all I've ever done with YouTube is just little 2 or 3 minute videos, and those are fairly quick, half hour or so, but these hour long shows take a while, so I'm learning how to do it. But we're getting the shows up, and so you can add them to your FlossTube list if that's the way you listen to things. And there's no video, but I put a picture up here and there so you have something to look at if you want to look at something. We can't sit here and show you everything we're stitching because we don't do video, but the audio is there and you can listen to us while you stitch and in your car, just like you can with the regular podcasts on your podcast app. So just another way to get us, and it's FlossTube Fiber Talk, and we'll show up. So, yeah, that's been fun. And then it also, when you find us on YouTube, on FlossTube, then be sure and watch the video that I did at the attic with Gene Lee looking at samplers. That's a lot of people watching that, and I think a lot of people watching it 2 and 3 times. That's a fun one, seeing all those samplers. So, yeah. Yeah, that's good stuff. I'm anxious to get back to the attic and do another one. I have a very good idea, I think, for another one. So
that, yeah, it was really fun to watch. So I didn't get to go, but it was cool to watch, actually. Yeah. You know, to sort of watch and to listen to the conversation about the different pieces and the shop itself. So
yeah, that's what I want to do is tap into Gene's mind more the next time, because that's a treasure trove of information about samplers and of all kinds. And so I want to be able to sit down with her and look at some samplers and tap into that little Fort Knox of knowledge. So, yep. So that's, that link is up there, and, I'll add it to the, page for this podcast as it was for last week so that you can find it quickly and watch that video. But it's a lot of fun to see all those samplers and different types. So, yes. Remember when I screwed up on the train positioning on the Shepherd's Bush stocking, which is finished now.
Great.
It, number one finished and on its way, or it will soon be on its way to Vanna for a finishing. Vanna's going to do the finishing on it. And then, number two. But anyway, I screwed up on that train and it took me 2 nights worth of cutting stuff out. Well. And, I've been sensitive to removing threads, posts. And Karen Harum at Needlepoint Nation, I really felt for her. Getting ready to take out a bunch of basket weave stitches on an 18-count canvas and dreading the job. Does anyone have a good tool that works? I'd like to buy a good one. And everybody, the majority of the people, I use a seam ripper.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Get a seam ripper. I haven't yet to purchase mine, but and then somebody, well, what kind? It was Pam Skinner, the Dritz generic yeah. seam ripper.
And yep.
And then be very careful not to cut the canvas. Yeah, that's the thing.
So, sorry, my voice is dead from yesterday. Anyway, yeah, so as a long-term seamstress-y person, that is the key. And it's, so the any of the seam rippers, the way that they work, it's almost like a lance. And then the cutting edge actually sits in, if you look at the crook, between your pointing finger and your thumb, right? So if you make an L that way, the ripping part, the point of the seam ripper is like your index finger. And then the cutting part is the webbing between those two fingers. So you put the point underneath the threads and then you push it underneath. And as you push forward, that webbing piece is the part that does the cutting. So the problem is that the pointing part is very sharp, and pointy. So depending on if you're not careful, you can go right into the fabric with that and tear your base fabric. So with, canvases, it's a little easier because you'll know when you hit that with that canvas because it's hard, right? With any kind of fabric, it'll glide right into it. So the trick with doing it is to go slow and to keep the tip of the seam ripper up a little bit. So don't point it downwards, but keep it up and just keep it down low enough that it'll just catch the threads without going deep into the fabric. And I know this because I was making my sister's prom dress many years ago, and it was a silk charmeuse. And it was a silk charmeuse, and the whole front of it was pieced, almost like quilting pieces. It was like I basically knocked off a Donna Karan runway dress for her. And so it was all these pieced silk charmeuse, and charmeuse doesn't lie on a selvage, right? It likes to shift. So to get all of those pieces to lie completely square to stitch them was a nightmare. And then I made one mistake and needed to rip it out. And of course I did exactly that. I went a little bit too quickly and caught the charmeuse, which is, it's like paper, and went right through it and had to then pull that whole piece out. And it's a nightmare. So that was my lesson of going very, very slowly. And the Dritz ones, so they're all pretty standard. There's really no difference one to the other. Nice ones have the seam ripper on one side, and then you slide it, and then they have a tweezers on the other side. So you can rip with one end and then use the tweezers to pull all the ripped threads out.
Charmeuse, that's a girl moose, right? Charmeuse? Yeah. Okay, just checking.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
The other thing that I do is because I don't, especially if I'm pulling lots of threads like that, I tend to not rip every thread and then have 47 million tiny little pieces. I will rip one every, 4 or 5 or 10 stitches and then pull them out as longer threads. But that's just, you'll find your rhythm of pulling out threads, whichever
yeah,
way
I
is the least frustrating.
Yeah, I used my Hardanger, I'm practicing that, Hardanger scissors, which are mm-hmm. a very narrow mm-hmm. point, and I use that to cut, and then I'm with you, yeah, I don't cut every one, I cut and pull out lengths, it seems to go
yeah.
faster. Yeah.
Yeah, if you have a seam ripper, because it's almost like, when you, when you're cutting wrapping paper and you get the scissors going and it just runs right through, it's kind of like that, so it's easy to do, and you can rip out an entire, you can cut an entire row, all of them pretty much in one movement of your arm. So if you had to rip an entire area, like a large area, it would go a lot faster. But then you're sitting there picking at it with tweezers for a while. And I always do that from the back and then go to the front and then clean it up afterwards because I really don't have a good reason for that.
Well,
I think in my head, yeah. I feel like I'm going to be picking at the fabric and I don't want to do that, but that's probably just exactly is in my head.
Yeah. But then Katie Dempster in this thread posted that she cuts on the back so she doesn't disturb the paint on the front. So if you're working
yeah.
with a painted canvas, I think that's
yep.
good advice there.
Yeah, I always cut on the back also.
Protect that. I loved Priscilla Thompson, Wine in a Cheerful Movie.
Oh my God. Okay, so, but here's the thing. Wine in a cheerful movie, but make sure it's white wine and very far away. Or it's in a sippy cup.
Yeah, there you go. Right? Yeah, white, red wine in a sippy cup in a movie. Okay.
Yeah. So that's another thing I've learned the hard way is that wine and stitching is a wonderful combination, and wine and stitching in a movie is an even better combination. But wine and stitching and a movie in a wine glass is a terrible combination because you've got, what do you have? You have a canvas, you have a lamp that's on an arm, you have threads, you have scissors, you have all kinds of things that are just begging to knock that glass over.
There's only one place it'll go to.
It'll go right on the stump work piece you just started.
Yep.
That's exactly where it will go. So fortunately, it's you know, you learn that lesson on something that you just started. That's just a practice scrap piece. And you say, wow, I knew that was going to happen. And I was right. and then you say, that's why they have sippy cups.
Mm-hmm.
Or, right, because, you know, there's a choice between I could just not drink red wine, or I could, you know, look like an idiot and drink out of a sippy cup, and I'll take the idiot every time.
Oh, picture it didn't happen.
Yeah.
There you go.
So that's it. You just have to find ways around these things.
Yes. Okay, sippy cup, red wine.
Red wine and sippy cup. Yeah, that's really bad. Now I sound like an alcoholic. I sound like an alcoholic mother is really what it is, right? Because only a mom would be resorting to putting red wine in a sippy cup. I think I'm a little embarrassed. I think I am. I'm not really sure yet.
No, because I have a sense that you would have a very large group of company there on that one.
Yeah. You know what it is? I'm just trying to troubleshoot. I'm trying to think of ways. Or like, you know, those coffee mugs that are travel mugs that are spill proof?
Yes.
Something like that, so that when you knock it over, which you will, or not everybody, right? So you have to take into account that I am klutzy, and my workspace is not set up where I have, like, you know, this vast amount of space where I can work. Like, I need to work on this whole infrastructure thing, because I need a frame for sure. I need to do this better now that I've finished one piece and I'm working on a couple now. I'm like, all right, I need a better setup than I have right now. So having it set up in a way that I can put a beverage that I'm not, you know, pretty much guaranteed to knock it over, that's going to be one of those things.
Now, while you're concocting your thread heaven, if you also take a sippy cup and brand it as the Stitcher, the Stitcher sippy cup, you can charge 20% more. See, it's extra.
That's true. Or you know how they have, so if you look, I was looking at thread organizers, because I've now gotten enough floss that I had to start putting it into bags. So that's another question I'll ask you. So I was looking, all right, what are ways that people store these things? And so I went into this whole rabbit hole of, you know, different ways people store things and organize their workspace, et cetera. And there's a lot of little handy things that people will put over the arm of an armchair that you can put your scissors and your TV remote and your whatever little things that you're using so that it's handy, right? So it's just hanging over the side. Now, if you put a cup holder on the side of your armchair along with those things, that also would go a long way towards not spilling things.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Exactly, yes.
So this is what I'm envisioning is like a little tray that goes on the edge of a chair, and it's going to have it's going to end up looking like a high chair is what it is. This is also not going in the direction I want. All right, so imagine this, but really classy, okay? So it's going to have a tray so that you can put like a pin cushion and stuff, and then it's going to have two little divots in it like a high chair would for cups, and one would be for a cup for a beverage, and the other one would be a cup for orts, right? So that way you can throw all your discard threads in one, and then you have your beverage in another, and that way neither of those things will get knocked over and spilled.
So basically, if I just make a trip to Babies R Us and look in the...
No. You can use that for inspiration, but I'm imagining it done in like a beautiful, like curly maple. You know, it's got to be classy.
Okay.
It's got to be classy. Yeah. But essentially, yes, we're producing. I guess what it is that I when I stitch, I have to be treated like a toddler because I'm going to knock things over is what we're deciding.
Exactly the conclusion I was reaching, yes.
Or that I have outgrown my stitching space is really what it comes down to. Is that, you know, it's been fine up to now just kind of working with like the really it's about 8 inches square of end table space and a lamp that I have rigged and my stitching that I don't have a really good place. Like I think I'm at that point where I say, all right, I need a proper chair. I need a floor stand and I need a table that's just going to have this stuff on it so that I can sit down and do things in a way that I'm not juggling things all the time. I think that's really what we've decided.
Yeah. And amazing how quickly that comes about too.
Yeah. It is. It is. Yeah. I'm comfortable and that's the, I think my reticence about it is that for me, even just watching TV or reading or doing anything, I tend to sit and I pull my legs up underneath me and I'm very fidgety. So to sit rigidly like that for a long period of time in a chair that's holding me like a dining room chair, that does not sound appealing to me at all. So I was very, sort of reluctant to go the route of getting a chair that is going to, you know, sit me like that because it doesn't, I don't like that idea, but I think what really comes down to is getting a chair that's going to be comfortable, but also that's a little bit supportive, almost like an office chair. But again, that has an area around it where I can put things that are not going to get knocked over.
Yep. Well, that's where my office chair, and then I went to Office Max Depot, whatever it is, and got one of those pads. Fellows makes them, a lumbar support pad.
Yes, those are great.
And put that on the chair. And so then I can sit in that office chair for hours and, mm-hmm. you know, properly mm-hmm. supported and quite comfortable. And, you know, one of the things that I do with my beverage is I place it on my working table where I sit, which is to my left, but I place it to the back and far enough so that I literally have to turn 90 degrees to get the beverage so that I have to turn mm-hmm. away from my stitching and the threads that are laid out on the table to get the beverage.
Yeah, it's on another, right, it's on the other side. And right, the way I'm set up now is that I have one table. So everything is on that table.
Yeah.
So, and because of the lamp, because I have a floor lamp, I have to reach over and under the floor lamp to get it. Like, it's just not, it's not good. It's not good. So I have a business trip coming up. So I'm going to be sitting on a plane sort of thinking about this and I've started looking at lap stands, because I would like to have something that's portable that I can take from place to place and that works with both round frames and stretcher bars. So now I'm into that phase and I'm slowly coming around to the idea that it's probably going to be a good idea for me to just drop the money on a millennial frame. But that's not going to be something portable that I can take to meetings. So that's the other thing is what do you take with you when you go?
Yeah. Well, I have a lap stand that can fold up and go in my suitcase. And then I take projects that are small enough to go in my, my computer bag.
So you take just hand pieces.
Yeah. Just small projects. Yes.
And then you have a lap stand that you like.
Yeah, I got it. It was at our guild meeting. Someone had passed away, and so it was, when that happens, then a lot of times all their stash comes to the guild.
Yes,
and
yes.
we can pick through it, and then you give a contribution to the memorial fund. Well, there was a mm-hmm. little lap stand. It's nothing, you know, it's just a cheap thing, but that works for me for small projects, and And it folds up. It's just a wood thing with a wood clamp, nothing fancy at all. But it folds up enough that it goes in the suitcase without a problem. So then I have that when I sit in the hotel room. And actually when I was in Phoenix here a couple weeks ago, actually made a floor stand out of it. I think I posted a picture about that.
You did.
I took a stool and a couple of books and a C-clamp, a big C-clamp. and clamped it all together, and then strung this lap stand out and had it hanging over the chair I was sitting in, and ended up having it was pretty effective. Had a floor stand for all intents and purposes to stitch with for a week, and so that was a plus. But yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of options. That one that Vonna uses, the System 4 stuff, which is pricey but built to last forever. All kinds of lap type stands, and you know, you mentioned the Millennial frame. I'll tell you, I've been working on that, using that with the stockings. Oh,
that's great.
Expensive, and you had to wait for it. But holy smokes, what a beautiful piece of equipment! It really is very nice.
I've
not regretted it. I really haven't. It really drum tight. You know, it holds them drum tight, and you can take the tension out when you're done for the night, and let the canvas not, you know, be relaxed, and put it right back the next day within seconds.
That's
just
nice.
You know, just by turning the knobs, the threaded knobs on each end, and you're right back to where you were. And yeah, I'll tell you, I really, really am glad I bought it. So, yeah, I recommend that. And you're right. I mean, it was a chunk of money, no doubt about it. It's like $120 or so, I guess, you know, for a scroll frame, but, built, you know, it's thick wood, not going anywhere, not going to bend. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really does the job. So yeah, big fan.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to work on that.
This infrastructure thing, you know, it just grows and grows.
But that's true. That's true of any hobby, right?
It's
you have the things that are your consumables, and then you have the things that are your reusable things. Sorry, my voice is, again, I'm struggling. These are the things that make needlework enjoyable. So they take out the bits of the process that are struggles, that are annoyances, right? So instead of me sitting with a canvas now doing the stump work piece, I'm working on a, like maybe a 6-inch or 8-inch embroidery hoop. So I'm really just noodling around and experimenting and trying different things. So for that, it doesn't matter because I do want to be flipping it around and turning it and everything. So for that, I don't know that I would put it on a stand because I'm rotating it, rotating the hoop itself. I'm flipping it upside down. So that I like having the flexibility, but for a counted piece or a larger piece, having it rigid in something where I can work two-handed more easily and I'm not having to balance it, it takes that element of, all right, well, how am I holding this in a position so that I can use both hands, but really holding it with my elbow? Like it makes it easier. And then it makes it faster, which means you go through pieces faster, which means you can move on to, I think you develop more quickly as a needleworker because your stitching is quicker, right? So the faster you move through something, the more you can move on to something else. So if the reason you're going slow is because you can't balance your work, that's just silly, right?
Right.
So that's the point where for me, all right, enough is enough. Let's get the proper tool for this to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And that's not for everybody because some people just like to sit and stitch and it's really just the process of it. You know, like we were talking, and we have talked before in a bunch of different cases where it's just the act of stitching where you can stitch as slow as you want. And really that's what you're getting out of it is just, you know, needle and thread through fabric and that's fine. But when you have a goal and you want to finish something because you want to learn something or move on to something else, it's nice to be able to move quickly. You know, and I watch now videos of other stitchers that I admire and they're just lightning fast and they get through the parts that are kind of the boring parts really, really quickly. So, and the only thing that's really keeping me back from learning to be able to do that is not having the right structures. So I just need to invest in a little bit of stuff, I guess.
No, I'm a big believer in having the right tools. I mean, you learn that.
Yeah.
Anybody who's owned a house knows that. If you have the right tools.
It's true of everything. Right.
That,
it's a difference between hand tools and getting power tools for things finally and saying, wow, why didn't I do this earlier? This is so much easier and so much more enjoyable because I'm not fighting with it.
Right. Yeah, the weekend house repair job goes down to an hour and then you move on to something else. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then there's, and even people listening to this, I'm sure there's several who will say, well, I don't need all that. I just stitch in hand. And,
right. And sometimes that's
amazing
that's fine.
To me. Yeah. And that's amazing to me. People who stitch in hand all the time. I couldn't do it. And then, you know, they come out with beautiful, perfect stuff. And, you know, there's a talent right mm-hmm. there. Because mm-hmm. you talk about, you know, the cost of infrastructure and the cost of the hobby, particularly needlepoint, but, really any of the needlework hobbies. And then, you know, then you have those people, they just buy canvas thread and a needle and sit in a chair and they're good to go. And
yeah,
there's, you know, other than the raw materials, there's no cost to them. And, and they're quite content doing that. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's talent. That's talent.
It is. And it's, I think it's style too. You know, you learn how to work tension differently when you have a stretched canvas versus not.
Yes.
And yep. I think with canvases, with counted work, I think having it stretched to me is, it's almost imperative. But then, you know, with a counted cross stitch, like a sampler, those would have been done in hand too, or on a hoop, I guess. So, yeah, I mean, I guess you could do it either way.
Stump yeah, well, work. people do. I don't even know if those little girls had hoops. I don't know if hoops. I imagine they were available. But,
yeah, they would have been. But then, like stump work, where you're working on two thicknesses of fabric, and the two thicknesses of fabric, the fabrics aren't the same fiber, and they don't behave the same way. You cannot do that with you can't do it in hand because you need the fabric taut in order to get the stitches placed properly. So there's certain things you can't do. But that said, for me, again, at this stage, which is the stage of I have no idea what I'm doing, I can't imagine yet working on a large piece because for me, I need to be able to manipulate manipulate the fabric, the base fabric, around every which way because I'm stitching a leaf and the leaf has, texture to it and you want it sort of be like in a V. So half the time I have it in one direction so I can stitch in that direction. Then I want to rotate it and stitch in the other direction. So I'm not really good enough yet where I can stitch sort of in every different angle because I'm paying attention to too many things. Mm-hmm. So it's like when you first drive a car, you're paying attention to or riding motorcycle, right? So that's more relevant experience and more recent for me. So when you first get on a motorcycle, the reason you learn in a parking lot and same thing with cars because you don't want to worry about whether somebody's going to pull out in front of you or whether there's a cat there or any of those things because right now, at that point, you're just worried about can I get the thing in gear and moving forward, right? That is the only thing. And can I do it without falling over? So once you master that part, then you can worry about, all right, can I get it in gear and moving at speed and then turn? All right, I got that part. And then once you get all that stuff, then you put yourself in a situation where all of those things are rote. And now you can do those things without thinking about them too much so that you can be safely looking at what's the traffic in front of me, what's the traffic at the side of me, what's the weather, what's the road conditions, all of the things you need to pay attention to do it competently. So with needlework, right now I'm at that stage of I feel like I'm going to fall over, right? So I need the flexibility to be able to move the canvas all the different ways because I'm paying attention to, you know, needle painting. So where am I blending threads and how long is each stitch? And so I don't want to pay attention to doing that. And also now I'm stitching from right to left versus left to right and upside down and all those things. I need to control as many variables as I can. So again, it's learning, right? I'm just kind of figuring this all out on my own. So.
Yep.
There will be a time 6 months from now where I say, all right, I got that figured out. Now I need to get it into a frame so I can go fast. But I'm a long way from fast with that stuff.
Just get it to look like something.
When I first started, I was just, you know, wow, that actually is the shape of a leaf. So that's great.
Good start.
it's the shape of a leaf. So that's good. And the stitch, you know, the stitch that was the sort of the edge of the leaf, I forget what it was called, but it was almost like a modified buttonhole stitch, but it gave the leaf sort of pointy edges. And it was really tough to do it in a way that came out even. So it, It's difficult. It's difficult to learn just the stitches, and to get them to be done competently. So there's the level of doing something competently, and then there's the level of doing something artistically. So I'm still in the, can I make it look like the shape of a leaf? And then I'll work about whether it's a pretty leaf, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
shades of green. Yeah. That's down the
road. Yeah. And it, you know, and that's fine, you know, like, and I think that's the key for me too, because, I was talking to somebody at work recently about this who was terrified to try something new. And it was the same conversation we have here all the time. You can't be afraid to fail, because there's no expectation that the first time you do something, it's going to be perfect. It can be terrible, and that's okay, because you will have learned something from it, and you'll be that much more comfortable because, okay, well, I did one, right? So do it terribly the first bunch of times, and that's fine. And yeah. I don't have an expectation. Like, I'm not looking at this saying, all right, when this is done, if it doesn't look exactly like the picture in the book, it's an utter failure and I'm terrible at this and I'll never do it again. I don't expect it to look like the book at all. Like, if it looks like anything that somebody can say, oh, that's a flower, I'll be thrilled, you know, like, you know, that's great. So my expectations are very low for this. And for me, that's how I try to approach these things is, you know, set the expectation low enough that I will take a second piece on,
yeah,
and not feel defeated by
right.
it.
Right.
So, and look for guidance, you know, and this is one where I definitely feel like working with somebody that knows what they're doing, that they could look at what I'm doing and say, all right, adjust a little bit this way and it'll be prettier. That will be tremendously helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where, talking about seminars and different organizations and classwork is going to be a big topic for me in the next year, I think, because I'm definitely going to start taking classes, because now I'm at a point where I feel like I've got enough of a groundwork, that the classes will be meaningful.
Yeah. To at least know what, it really comes down to know what questions to ask. Yeah. You got enough experience that you now know you have questions and you know what to ask and
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Help me through this. And yes.
Yeah. It's a little bit of an economic thing too. I know I can teach myself. I can look at a book of stitches, embroidery stitches, and say, okay, I can follow the instructions to do the stitch and I can do the stitch. I know I can do that. So I have to go through that process on my own. I don't need a teacher, and I don't need to pay a teacher to do that. I'd rather take that money and invest it in tools. But then once I've done those stitches and I know them, then I can invest in lessons where I can say, all right, I know how to do the stitch, but it doesn't look as pretty as it could. What can you recommend? What am I doing differently than what you're doing that makes your stitch look finished and polished and beautiful and mine not? So that, for me, that's where having an instructor will be beneficial. For other people, it's totally different. Some people want at the very beginning somebody to sit next to them and say, all right, do this and you're doing great. And everybody learns differently, right?
Right.
So I'm a book learner. I learn best looking at pictures and translating it sort of on my own, at my own pace and noodling around and ripping it out and doing it again. And other people learn best by following somebody's instructions with having that person looking at them. So this is just sort of my path, and everybody does it differently.
Yeah, well, and that's, you know, that's teaching 101. And when I was a teacher, you know, that's, you know, every lesson plan is, you got to have something, a way for the people who read to learn it, and people who watch, you have to give them a way to do it. And then you have to have a way for people who just want to get their hands dirty and figure it out. And you give them, you know, all those options available, and then everybody gets a chance to learn what the way that's most effective for them. Because for a lot of people, to read instructions and then translate them into action is very, very difficult. They can't do it. And, can't comprehend, can't retain it enough and understand it well enough to actually apply it, and it's a real struggle. But then, show them, you know, give them 30 seconds and show them and they're off and running. And
Yeah. And having, so you've done, you know, formal, like, you know, classroom teaching, and I've done teaching of lots of different kinds, but not in a, not in that sort of school setting and not in a very many years. But it's kind of fun to teach each of those different levels as well. It's fun to teach somebody that says, I have a needle in my hand and I don't even know how to thread it. But it's also fun to teach somebody, you know, how to finesse something too. Like all of, as a teacher, all of those different stages are fun because, you know, it's great to see somebody pick up something and say, hey, I did it. You know, I've never done that before, but it's also fun to see somebody make that leap between, you know, I know how to do this and then, wow, I did something I'm really proud of. Yeah. You know, so I really can empathize with the teachers that we've spoken to and that we will speak to about how rewarding that must be to stand in front of a classroom, like all the work that goes into that. And it is a tremendous amount of work, the preparation and the kitting and the design work and the, all of the training that goes into becoming a needlework teacher. I can absolutely feel how rewarding that must be to be able to go into a group of people and feel, what it is like for them to get it, right?
Right. Well, that's, you know, that's, yeah, anybody who's taught, you know, grade school or taught, you know, taught kids will tell you that the most rewarding time is when the bell rings and the door is closed and it's just you and the kids because of that. And when you see a child who has struggled and is fighting and finally the light goes on, there's nothing quite like that.
Yes.
And it, you know, you talk about children, but it's anybody. I mean, adults are just older children. And they just, they want to learn too, and they want to do well. And, you know, I just remember back when I was teaching, and you put together a lesson plan, and then in my mind, in each of the classes would be, you know, I got to remember Johnny over here. When we start this project, I got to head to him because I need to get him off on the right foot by showing him. And then once that happens, then he'll be fine. Or, you know, or Susie, she has trouble focusing, so I have to stop in every 5 minutes with Susie and make sure she's staying on task. And you have those kids in each classroom that you mentally pull out and say, you know, they need that a little extra something, and you have to be able to recognize what that is, and then mm-hmm. they'll be fine. And then of course you have your advanced students where when the lesson plan is done, then you say, all right, now I got to get a couple of extra things to challenge that advanced student. And when everybody's working, go over to the advanced student who's probably already done and say, all right, now here's something else you can do that puts you on a new level. And, I mean, that to me, that's the fun of teaching at any level in any class is to be able to identify those people that need a little different approach. And help them get, and then see that light go on, and then they're off and running, and then they're with the rest of the class, and they're feeling comfortable, and then they go. I mean, you talked about Jeremy, wanting to, you know, not wanting to go into something because he doesn't know. And the lesson is, well, that's why you do it, is because you do it to learn.
And why do you think they have a class in that? So that you can,
And, exactly. You know, but then as the teacher to help any, you know, a kid who's reluctant. Here, let me just get you started, and like you say, get the bike in gear, and then you're out the door. And teaching is so much fun just from that perspective. Yeah,
it is, and the nice thing about needlework as opposed to motorcycles is that there's a much less chance that you're going to die if you make a mistake.
Much less, yes.
Yeah. So
worst you're going to do is draw a little blood out of your fingertip. That's probably
right.
The worst.
Or spill a glass of red wine. And really, you know, so what's the worst thing? You take that out of the hoop, you throw it away, you start over. Like no big deal. So there really is no failure. There's just starting over.
Yes. And using Christine's Stitchers Sippy Cup. now available for $29.99. In three different colors.
I have so many mixed feelings about this because I don't know if I'm ashamed or if I should just own the fact that I'm a drinking Stitcher because I don't know. Yeah. You know what? I'm just going to own it.
Sure. Christine's Needlework Sippy Cup.
You know what? We may have invented the first.
Fiber Talk approved. You know,
we may have just invented the first Fiber Talk merch.
There we go. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Next event, we have to have a merch table now.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. All right. I'm on it. I'm on it.
Okay. All right. That's it for this week. Debbie Rowley Sunday. Oh, great conversation with Debbie. A lot of fun. And in that show on Sunday, you will hear that Christine finally finishes Diamond Delight 10. So, while talking to the designer, she finishes the piece. So that was fun.
Yeah, how awesome is that?
Yeah, yep. So that's Sunday, Debbie Rowley on Sunday, and so you'll hear from us then, and we'll be back next Wednesday for another one of these. Thanks for listening.
Take care.